The age of NIL is killing college athletics across the board. Or is it? See, I don't think that it's really hurting Baylor as much as other people may say. This is Locked On Baylor.
You are Locked On Baylor, your daily podcast on the Baylor Bears, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody, Drake Toll here from Sikkim365.com, joined today by Matt Isbear of Our Daily Bears. I tell you what, I promise you, when I tell you that a big guest is coming on, it's got to be, and one of the top three in Locked On Baylor history is with us today, thanking everyone for making Locked On Baylor your first listen every single day when it's not our daily podcast. But Matt, I know that you have the perfect segue into today's conversation on the NIL and how it directly impacts Baylor.
Well, it just kind of hit me like I took about 2 weeks and change to be with our newborn daughter, and I'm really enjoying the time. That's great. I'm taking 2 or 3 weeks to be with our newborn daughter, having a blast. It's great. You know, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of bottles to wash and give and diapers to change and the whole thing. But there's also these magical moments, right? Where she's laying on my chest and, you know, she's snoring peacefully. She might stir awake and look me in my eyes and do that, you know, that cute baby reflex smile just as she grunts and poops her pants right on my chest. And that's kind of how I feel the NCAA is acting right now with the whole NIL situation. They don't know what they're doing. They're kind of flailing around as people ask them for something. And then they try to provide something last minute. That doesn't actually make any sense.
So if you want an explanation for the folks that are listening right now on the NIL from an NCAA standpoint in perspective of a metaphor, Mark Emmert on Matt Isbear's chest and then just craps himself. That is basically the state of the current NIL in the NCAA. And Matt, what's weird, you know, people talk about this thing that's called the Baylor bubble, and it exists from about University Parks, from about University Parks, and it ends at about 16th Street. That right there is your Baylor bubble, stretching from I-35 to LaSalle. That's a beautiful depiction of the Baylor bubble. And it feels like everything outside, you ever watch Endgame, where there's the Baylor bubble, and then there's like, you know, people are shooting at it and stuff, and, you know, all of the Marvel things and whatever it is, Avengers, whichever it is, something like that. It feels like that's Baylor's protective dome over itself in NIL, as if like right now it's this distant thing where you're like, oh yeah, I bet that's hurting some other people, but I feel fine.
I think the status quo hasn't really changed nationwide. The storylines and the headlines have changed, but the schools that have a natural financial advantage still have a natural financial advantage. The schools that don't have a financial advantage still don't. It is just in a different format. I also think that Baylor, judging by the people who are running the main programs that are impacted by NIL right now, right? Dave Aranda, Scott Drew, Nikki Collin, I'm not sure that they're actually going out and trying to compete with the top of the top 4 stars and the top of the top 5 stars in all aspects, right? The kid that's coming out of high school that is expecting a 6 or 7 figure NIL deal probably isn't coming to Baylor in the first place. And I think Scott Drew and Dave Aranda and Nikki Collin know that. Not to say that Baylor can't actually provide NIL opportunities. We just may not be interested in providing, I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, a prima donna NIL deal to some of these top players, right? Not to say they aren't talented, not to say that they don't deserve it. They do. You are what you're worth. You know, you are worth what you are paid. But I'm not sure it impacts Baylor for a number of different reasons. The Baylor bubble being one, just because Baylor being a private school, not going to be attractive to a lot of the top recruits, but also just because I don't know that those are the kids that these sports are going after to begin with.
You know, we have a list of questions that we kind of ask ourselves NIL conversation across the board at Locked On. Basically, how does it affect the school? How does it affect the team? How does it affect your standing in the conference? And I feel like those questions are great for an Auburn, right? Or an sure. Alabama or a Florida State, where they're looking at, okay, in comparison to the rest of the conference, but Baylor's
and
never
Oregon.
Been in.
Yeah.
And Oregon, right. Baylor's never been that school, though, that's like, we need to compare ourselves financially to the rest of this conference, or from a student body standpoint, you know, how big's our campus, how big's our endowment, you know, what are we bringing in annually from an athletic standpoint, and to be the outlier but still so successful at sports, it feels like Baylor's mixed in that, hey, we're the small Christian college in the middle of Waco, which it's not even that small anymore, but, you know, for you get it. It still feels like Baylor's trying to cover that mantra, but at the same time, Matt, like, at some point in time in our lives, money has to trump culture for most every athlete if the NIL continues the way it's going.
Only if you let it. Only if you make that decision, right? That's an active decision that these programs are going to have to make, right? At what point? You know what? I'll give props to our rivals in Austin, Texas, right? They decided at some point, the receiver that I think ended up going to Nebraska, the name escapes me.
Yeah, million-dollar kid.
Now look, that they might have not actively decided that they weren't going to match that. They might not have had the ability to, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say that there was a cap on the number that they were willing to provide the kid.
Yeah.
At some point, schools are going to have to make decisions like that. And I think Baylor's just not going to play in the same pool of NIL deals, not Baylor, the academic institution, right? But those providing those NIL deals. I'm just not sure that that's the wave pool that Baylor wants to play in anyway. Yeah. So it's out there. Should the opportunity present itself and the boosters want to do that? But I'm not sure that that's the natural playing ground for the Baylor boosters.
Matt, one of the questions that's burning my mind right now that I wish that I could give a take on, I can't. Like, I'm just going to throw it to you and see what you got on expert opinion, is that pool. You talk about Baylor's not really playing in that pool right now. What if the day comes where you have to play in that pool to have sustained success in college athletics as the NIL builds? Is that day on the horizon, or does Baylor just kind of count on, hopefully that day never comes, we never have to dip our toes in it?
I'm trying to figure out why what Baylor is doing now wouldn't continue to work, right? Look out for the interest of the student athlete, right? Make these the best people that you possibly can on the field of play or court of play and in the classroom. And those kids will flock to you, right? There's people out there like Keontae George, right? I don't know what NIL opportunities he has in front of him right now, but they're not headlines right now. So if you're going to handle your business with NIL, you can do it, you know, less noisy than other schools are. I just don't know that that has to be a decision Baylor has to make at this point, right? And again, the NCAA likely isn't going to look the same in 3 to 5 years. So why shell out a whole bunch of money right now before we know exactly what it's going to look like? If the NCAA can just drop brand new guidelines on a Monday, who's to say what happens 3 months from now or a year from now?
Yeah. Now, Matt, before we get into really the meat of the show in talking about Baylor's preseason ranking next year in football, I do want to close that chapter of our entire chapter of Baylor NIL that we've hit in the last 7.5 minutes on. In general, to me, it feels like the culture of Dave Aranda is, I think it goes right along with what you're saying. He's never going to have a kid sit in his office, DJ Lagway, and say, DJ, I promise you $1 million if you come to Baylor. And there are schools that are doing that to DJ Lagway right now. Do I know it for a fact? No, but I can only imagine Jimbo Fisher and Steve Sarkisian are pitching that kind of, hey, you know, that's in the recruiting pitch. And I don't think it's in Dave Aranda's. And I am wholly okay with that right now, because even if it means you go 8-4 perennially, I would rather be the team that's going 8-4 and not paying their players $1 million.
But that's the thing. Other schools have been known, a particular Burnt Orange school is known for individual hyped players.
Yeah.
What good has that done you? Right? There's individual talents on Florida's team right now, on Auburn, right? There's individual talents all over the SEC and the Pac-12. What does that get you, though? If the entire team, that's why football, whether or not it's my favorite sport or not, you have to say that it is the ultimate team sport. 22 players, they all have to be doing the same thing. They all have to have the same emotional investment into what you're doing. It is not just about one player and his skill. It is about what the other 10 players are doing at the same time. So if you want to invest all of your money and push all of your chips into the center of the table for one player, go for it. That's fine. It's not the way I would personally build my program. I don't think it's how Dave Aranda is going to build his program either.
Now, Matt, the next question that I really am, I don't even know if it's a question. It's more of a topic. CBS Sports 24/7 has released its preseason, like, way too early rankings, as it does fairly consistently. And in their latest drop, 24/7 has labeled Baylor University as the number 5 school in the nation in college football going into next year's season. And I, like, at first I was like, damn straight. Yeah, that is us. And now I'm like, no, this is the worst. I hate this. Baylor's never top 5 preseason. They're not going to be in the AP poll. What is going on at 24/7 Sports?
I'm trying to come up with a reason to disagree with this.
Right. That's the worst part.
I don't know, outside of the massive powerhouses in the SEC who are basically playing a different sport when it comes to, like we said, recruiting and development and investment into the program. Is there a school that feels more solid than Baylor right now, right? You look at the top, right? Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma at 4, which I'm not sure I agree with that at all. And let me pause real quick. I'm looking at the correct list, right?
May 8th. Yeah. That should do it.
Okay. And Oklahoma at 4, which I don't agree with at all. Right. But Baylor at 5 feels right. I would take a Baylor, if I'm being as objective as possible, I would take a Baylor over Michigan. I would take a Baylor over a Texas A&M, over Notre Dame, over Utah. I just don't see why Baylor would be lower than that. Great offensive line projections, great defensive line projections, awesome coordinators, steady head coach. Why couldn't this be the 5th best team in the nation?
Yeah, I'm struggling to try to disagree with Baylor being in the top 5. And I think you have to go back to the idea that, you know, obviously I don't think Texas is going to even outrank Baylor in the AP poll, but those kind of schools, the ones that these people point to, these national pundits point to and say they're better than a Baylor or better than, you know, it's some years your Iowa States that sneak in there. And right now at 5, it's someone tweeted this out. They're like, this is the worst thing in the world because I want Baylor to have that underdog mentality going into next season. And this kind of hype for a university that lost its star players. Think about this. 6 guys in the NFL draft, 11 guys total gone to the NFL. And I was thinking about it yesterday, right? Like if I was going to put, okay, podcasting world. Let's break the fourth wall here for everybody at home. In the podcasting world, there's something called SEO. You probably know what it is. You go to YouTube, sure, and you're trying to find those buzzwords that are going to make people click on your podcast, on your link, whatever. And I was thinking, who are the SEO players back for Baylor next season, right? Because last year you had Terrell Bernard, Abram Smith, Treston Ebner, like Gary Bohannon, who, you know, obviously. And then your Jalen Petries. I don't even know if that's a Jalen Petrie. So now those guys are gone. You've lost your SEO players, as I want to call them. How can you be a top 5 team when really the heart of your program is pretty much gone?
But Drake, those weren't SEO players before last season. To yes. The nation. To Uh-oh. Us, of course.
I like
to
where you're going us, with this, Matt.
Of course, right? But why can't this success be sustained? What usually disrupts a program who reaches, you know, a top 10 status, right? It's, oh, well, they had a generational quarterback. Everything else stayed the same, but the quarterback stayed the same. Or right. They had a flash in the pan offensive coordinator, right? That's usually kind of what happens when you see a spike in rankings for a particular smaller school. That's not the case here. This program is built off of defense, line play, and smart coordination, right? It feels right. Drake, how many times over the last 7-8 years has Baylor been like in the conversation for the playoff? Yeah. With all of us knowing that Baylor wouldn't make the playoff, but in the conversation for the top seven-ish spots. On the ESPN graphic, when they show the top four, oh, well, the first couple out, one Baylor was amongst those. It makes complete sense to me. Have some faith. It's okay to be the hunted every once in a while, right? We went through this transition phase with the Scott Drew basketball program. This went from an underdog program to now we have a target on our backs every single season, and we expect to moving forward. And when you have a steady hand on the wheel in a Dave Aranda or a Scott Drew, it usually turns out okay.
Dave Aranda, good surgeon, steady hand. The best.
Exactly.
And I guess, Matt, you're right. I should trust Dave Aranda and the Baylor Bears, number five in the nation, and not having the underdog. Well, one of the things, here's maybe why I hate it. Remember Michigan State? Or you know what? I could throw out so many of these freaking teams that kind of come out of the ashes out of nowhere, right? Matt Rhule Baylor. Okay. 11-1 transfers into 2-7. Granted, there was a ton of stuff that factored into that, right? You can't just say that without context, but there's so many schools that's like, wow, what a damn good year. And then the next year, it's like, whatever happened to them? You know, your NC State or your Wake, they'll have a flash in the pan and be gone. And it worries me that Baylor being at five next year is one of those is one of those examples of, oh, top preseason top five, and then 7-5 finish.
Think of it this way. This is a reward for the type of program Dave Aranda is building. Not necessarily just because of the success last year, but because of the steadiness, right? And the way that this team is built. Baylor's not losing a generational quarterback. Love Gary, but we're not losing a generational quarterback. We're not losing generational skill position players, right? Looks like maybe the running back position might be more skilled, maybe equally as effective, but potentially more skilled, right? Defense has players to step up to at least replicate to some degree what this defense did last year. And it might look different, right? I trust this coaching staff to put the players in position to succeed, even if it looks different than last year, which is why I'm not terribly worried about losing 11 players to the NFL.
Matt, I'll say this to kind of put the nail on that topic in itself is that when I look down up and down these 24/7 rankings that came out, one thing that I do see is Michigan State in their preseason rankings being put at that 16 spot. Granted, they beat Michigan last year, who beat Ohio State. The transitive property doesn't work in football, but that still takes you at least somewhere, right? And they're the same team that won a New Year's Six Bowl, and instead of being top 10, 24/7 has put them at 16. Baylor, on the other hand, in a very similar boat, winning the conference, though, and winning a New Year's Six Bowl, has been put at number five. So it looks like this wasn't just a blind Baylor was good last year. Let's throw them up there as well. And maybe they're getting the national respect they deserve. But the next thing that I want to get to, Matt, to end it off, conference championship games. It was announced really today or in the last 24 hours that they could end up going away very soon. The ACC is looking at filtering theirs out, and different conferences are seeing options for rescheduling or new schedules for their conferences. But first, before we get to that, Matt, I want to tell you and everyone at home about BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all things sports betting. Throughout the NBA playoffs right now, the MLB as well, I myself, I'll say it, I did it. I went and put a bet on first inning no score, yeah, for the game between the Rays and the Angels last night. And guess what? They didn't score in the first inning, the Rays or the Angels, and it hit at BetOnline.net. If you go today, you can also see the preseason top 10 because there are only 10 in the Big 12 next year and their odds to win the conference. You'll be surprised to see where Baylor is, and it'll be a conversation we hit later this week. But at BetOnline, you can bet on the Baylor Bears to win the Big 12 at really solid odds. So MLB, NBA, you have fight season going on as well. BetOnline.net for your live betting, your esports, everything gaming, all of it at BetOnline.net, where the game starts. Go to BetOnline.net. Now, Matt, I really right now have been paying attention to other conferences and the shakeup in college football and how it could transition into the Big 12, especially with 14 teams coming. And it seems like the death of the conference championship game is almost imminent now in the Power Five as the ACC really explores cutting theirs out, and other conferences will certainly follow suit. I'm going to cast a wide net here. Is that good? Is that bad? What on earth is going on? Where does it even? Why would you even want to cut it out?
Well, let's say that you are a non-SEC power conference.
Okay.
And you have one dominant team, say a USC or an Ohio State or a Clemson, or I'm going to sneak this in here, a Baylor.
Thank you.
Why would you give that team an extra opportunity to lose, potentially preventing that team from getting a playoff spot? Right? That's the goal here. I think if you are a conference commissioner, that's the benefit. Right? Now, when, not if, when the playoff goes to eight teams, I think this has a similar but slightly lessened effect, right? If you have a borderline seven or eight seed team that's going into a conference championship game with a team that's already pretty solidified in one of those top five, six spots, don't give them an opportunity to knock both teams out potentially, right? I, you know, from a personal perspective, I like the conference championship game. Obviously, yeah. We're all everybody in the Baylor fandom feeling pretty good about conference championship games recently.
Yes.
But I would be okay putting more of an emphasis on your body of work during the regular season and really proving out who the champion is that way. Now, didn't work out great for us in 2015. I understand that. However, I think it's going to work out okay moving forward.
I agree. It's going to emphasize the full body work. It's going to put even more emphasis too on the regular season, which I've always hated the idea that like, oh, an expanded playoff is going to ruin the regular season. What I think ruins the regular season is teams that have two losses, right? If you go, let's say you're okay. For wild example, let's go Oregon, right? This is just a wild example. Oregon's usually somewhere around the top 10 or playoff conversation with the Pac-12, if anybody is. And you play in your first five games, you play USC on an up year, and you play, we'll say, Ohio State, right? And you're 3-2. You're automatically out of the playoff.
Don't lose two games.
Yes, but then the rest of the regular season just doesn't matter. I think it doesn't dilute the regular season necessarily.
Have a better scheduling system in your conference.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it boils down to you just have to think of these things in the off season. If you're a conference, right? If you're a conference commissioner, if you're a scheduling department, you have to take these things into consideration, right? It's not an accident that SEC schedules the way they do sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So I think if your goal as a conference is to get a team into the playoff with, you know, the current four team structure, this is a safer way to play that, yeah. Right? If you know you're going to have at least one dominant team, protect that team a little bit, right? It feels gross. I don't like it, right? I'd rather just have 64 football teams playing a bracket and whoever
Mike
wins
Leachin.
The merit. Exactly. Just the meritocracy, right?
Right.
If you're the best, then you'll win the games. That's the way I would prefer to do it. I understand why a conference would remove their championship game, even though it's less fun.
It's much less fun for me and the average college football viewer that enjoys conference championship weekend because it brings such great games a la Baylor and Oklahoma State last year. And I think to that point, too, granted, if I'm on the Oklahoma State side of this conversation, if I am locked on Oklahoma State Cowboys, I'm probably saying damn straight, you know, take it away.
Absolutely.
Because Oklahoma State's Big 12 champions last year and they get to hang that in their field house. But instead, Baylor now has that put up on the Simpson hires, whatever you want to call it. It has like seven names now. And
Time for some perspective. I'm sorry, but it's time for some perspective. Baylor was less than a yard away from being on that side of the conversation. And we have to think about it that way sometimes. Sometimes games are won by less than a yard. And in the case of this conference championship game, right, that nobody was discounting the season Oklahoma State had. Baylor fans know how good they were. The Big 12 knows how good they were. But nationally, it's a little different. It sucks. I don't like it, but I understand it.
Yeah. Well, with this being filtered out too, you look at the Big 12 schedule and what that's going to look like, because I'm trying to think in terms of a 10-league team and a 10-team league, and that's just not what it's going to be, because the Big 12 may see as many as 14 teams across the board, and then 12, obviously, when the four new teams move in and the other two will move out. And at that point, with 12 teams, your scheduling is going to be so key. And even in that, does the death of a conference championship game mean the death of divisions and that scheduling is then just put together? Let's try it again. Good now.
Can't hear you. There we go. Now I can hear
you. All right. Does the death of a conference championship game mean the death of divisions and mean the life of these conferences becoming ever more meticulous in how they schedule out their seasons?
Bring me the pods. Yeah, it probably lessens the impact of a division structure, which I'm okay with, right? Keep your rivals, but then go play the rest of the teams in the conference. If your conference is too big where you can't play everybody in one season, rotate it. I don't know, like a pod structure, something like that. I'm very pro pod. If you
PP
push and pod. How about that for timely news?
Yes.
So yeah, I think divisions probably go away in most scenarios, but it is what it is, right? Like I said, hey, it goes all the way back to the NIL conversation we had. This sport is going to change in a lot of ways that people don't like in the next 4 or 5 years. If we truly want this to be fair / equal / whatever your definition of those two words are for as many teams as possible, for as many players as possible, there's going to be some uncomfortable change, and that's okay. We're still going to watch football. Football's not going away.
Nah.
The organization around it just might change, and you can still support your team. You can still take joy in the success your team has. However you scale that, whether it be on a week-to-week basis or on a season basis, it's still going to be fun.
Matt, last question on the topic of these. Let's go pod here.
Let's go pods.
Even if there's not pods, whatever happens in this, if the conference championship game goes away, pods or no pods, divisions, no divisions, does this inherently hurt a Baylor more than it hurts at Oklahoma State? Does it help a Baylor more than it helps an Iowa State or a Texas? Or does it hurt more than it does in Oklahoma? Does it put Baylor at an advantage or disadvantage over anybody in any way? Or are you all just kind of fending in the same boat?
I think everybody's still, for the most part, right? You might have some scheduling quirks with some conferences, right? And we'd have to see exactly how they play out. But knowing what we know now, I don't think it changes much, right? You schedule the best schedule that you possibly can, and you beat those teams, and the rest takes care of itself. That's how the system should work. And if it works that way, I'm fine with it.
I love it. Matt, if the people out there, I'd be so surprised if they haven't. If the people out there have not heard of your stuff, or haven't found your stuff somehow, A, they're under a rock, but B, they need to know where to go. Where do they go?
Hey, it's a very specific life choice. This is what I tell everybody. Hey, but disclaimer, very specific life choice. If you want to follow me, it's Matt Is Bear on Twitter. Go follow Between Two Bears on Twitter as well. We're trying to get back into a regular cadence now that I'm coming back from baby break. It's not really a break. Don't let my wife hear that. But yeah, those would be the best places. And my co-host, Evan Hebert. And of course, go check out ourdailybears.com. And we're going to be doing some fun stuff over the summer. Maybe some, hey, if you're kind of new to football, learn more about football in this very football for dummies kind of way. Respectfully.
I love it. Matt, for you, for everybody, you beat that bad boy.
Beat that bad boy.
I had to throw that back out there before we left today for a little callback, you know, from earlier. And tell everyone also that tomorrow's show is covering with John Garcia Jr., the director of recruiting at Sports Illustrated, the difference in the Big 12 and the SEC. What sets those two conferences apart? And is that gap closing or widening? But I want to thank you for making Locked On Baylor your first listen. Make your second listen Locked On Big 12. Josh Neighbors, in a half hour or less, gives you all you need to know about the Big 12. Concise, entertaining, Locked On Big 12, wherever you get your podcast. Matt, thanks so much for coming on. Let's do it again soon.
Hey, sick'em, Drake.
Sick'em, and thank you all for making Locked On Baylor your first listen. And this has been Locked On Baylor.